Buona sanit tajjeb lilkom semmija ta' Campus FM. Dan huwa Eman Borċ u programm jor, aħna hawn. Kif intom? Nisperaw li tinsabu tajbin, nisperaw li il-ġimgħa tagħkom sejra tajjeb ukoll, il-jiem qed igerkbu u laqas nista' nemmen li diġà qegħdin nistgħu ngħidu qed immissu wkoll issa mal-periferiji tas-sajf. U x'vera kif jibda jinbidel daqsxejn, it-temp nibdew ukoll naħsbulu biex ingawdu dawn il-ġranet sbieħ li joffru l-gżejjer Maltin. Però għalikom li tkunu qegħdin waqt il-ħidma ta'kom ta' kull jum l-istazzjoni Campus FM 103.7 dejjem ikun ma'kom bil-programmi varji u diversi interessanti u koloriti li kollu ta' kull jum. U dan il-programm aħna hawn fil-fatt jagħmel dan l-aspett ta' diversità, l-aspett tal-inklużjoni u l-aspett ta' dak kollu li huwa Malti jiġi hawnhekk fuq din il-mejda li jkollna ġewwa l-università u niddiskutu flimkien ma' professjonisti, esperti u attivisti minn diversi oqsma differenti. Il-ġimgħa dieħla kellna magħna il-Marco Calleja f'isem il-grupp Checkpoint Malta u bdejna nitkellmu daqsxejn dwar naħseb tkellimna dwar is-saħħa sesswali, tkellimna dwar is-sesswalità, tkellimna dwar is-sess, tkellimna dwar it-tabu li jeżisti fil-gżejjer Malti, però wkoll tkellimna dwar l-HIV, tkellimna dwar ukoll ċertu sfidi, ċertu realtajiet u hemm minna li biex verament inkunu qegħdin nagħmlu ġustifikazzjoni ta' dan is-suġġett għandna nerġgħu ngħaqdu għal sija oħra ta' diskussjoni biex inkomplu nifhmu ir-realtà x'inhi. Ħalli nagħmlu din l-intervista bl-Ingliż u għalhekk I would like to welcome Christian Vincent, also I can I call you Chris, like just
yes,
easier. It's easier. Who's also part of Checkpoint Malta. Chris, I was just giving an explanation and an overview to our listeners on some themes that we discussed last week regarding sex, sexuality, regarding the taboo in Malta, but I think it's also a conversation that we, every country has to a certain extent or to a certain level. And also how we had Marco to with us last week, who very graciously in a span of a few minutes we created and produced a radio show. But something that came out of this discussion is the importance that we need to talk and that we need to have these conversations more more openly and not just have them within our four walls in our living rooms. Also for our audience to know who Chris is, can you just introduce yourself? Because I can't do justice to that.
I'll try my best. Well, thank you first of all for inviting me. I'm very happy to and very honored to be part of a program like this and to include me in the conversation. As you mentioned, I'm Chris. I am Danish.
Not Dutch.
I'm not Dutch, but I've lived for. I have a really confusing backstory. So I'm Danish. I've lived the last years in the Netherlands, but moved back to Denmark just pre-COVID. Very bad timing. And I am an actor by profession, an activist by heart, and people in Malta might have. might know of me because of a specific video that I made with Love in Malta where I was the hugging guy.
we're going to keep the hugging guy on air at the moment, okay. Just like put a pin
suspense
on it, and we'll get into it later on.
So otherwise, I am, as I said, an activist, an HIV activist. I am positive myself. I'm HIV positive. I've been that since 2014. Came out with it, or like started being public about it in 2018. And have since then established with a group of amazing people, Checkpoint Malta, that we will also, I guess, put a pin on for now.
I like putting a lot of pins, but then things start making sense, don't they? Marco, would you just like to briefly again just introduce yourself?
I'm back. I was with you last week. I'm back again. I'm Marco. I'm also an actor. I'm also involved in the local media scene. I present and I host and I produce. I have a background in science as well. Studied abroad, so I did have a bit of a taste of mentality, living abroad, it's all about Maltese, and I think that's
practically it.
I like how I have two webcams in front of me right now, and just like I feel like we're going to produce some sort of like, you know,
the radio drama.
Exactly, you know, like, yes, they're very popular in Malta, like radio dramas, like
really,
they're a thing. Just you know, we discussed about Checkpoint Malta, and I'd like to understand more about, like, yes. In 2018 was the formulation, 2018 2019, something along those lines.
So it happened in 2019.
Okay,
post this video. Like, can we talk about the video now?
Let's talk about the video. Like, what's the video? Like, the hugging guy. Who's the hugging guy?
Who's the hugging guy? What's this madness? A bit of backstory first.
Yeah.
So in 2018, I came to Malta for the first time due to a love affair. It ended well. We're friends.
It ended well.
But because of that, when I had just, as I said, I had just come out with being HIV positive through a Dutch magazine and on Facebook and whatnot, and then Clayton from Allied Rainbow Communities, upon me arriving to the island, asked, "Hey, would you mind talking a bit about living with HIV with a news station?" And little did I know that no one has actually ever, and to this day still not, come forward with face talking about being HIV positive. So that kind of started a conversation, say, which was really interesting. I didn't know this, and for me, it was easy to talk about. Like, it really nothing. I'm. It's not affecting me by talking about it.
At that point, what did you know about Malta in sense of the community of Malta as a society?
Oh, please don't hate me. I knew nothing. Pre 2018, if you would have asked me to place Malta on a map, I'd blush. Mm. So I'm really happy that has changed now. It's been a steep learning curve, yeah, since then. I didn't know much about the community when I landed. Upon driving to Love in Malta for the interview, Clayton would kind of update me in the car, and it was just a shocking explanation after the other of the circumstance here.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was baby Chris in Malta, so it was very new. I still didn't know all the complication, all the details of it. But I do remember one specific moment during the interview where I remember, like, it was Jonathan Chilia, I think, asking, like, what advice I would give for someone, you know, dealing with their HIV status. And I would say, well, you can always contact your AIDS Foundation. And then Clayton sitting in the corner of the room going, "We don't have an AIDS Foundation."
Yeah.
And I remember, like, just turning, going, "What?" And I'm like, "Wait, what?" Okay, so first of all, get an AIDS Foundation.
Yeah.
Was my first advice. So no, I really didn't know, as you can hear also from this reaction. Like, I was completely oblivious to the standpoint of the community at that point.
So when this conversation start, when we're saying the circumstances and the difficulties, yes, what are we understanding here? Marco, maybe this is something that you can also feed into. We're saying that there's no AIDS Foundation. What does that mean? Is there no organization? Is there a lack of representation? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think the dialogue hadn't started.
Yeah.
We knew it was there, but the dialogue hadn't started. So actually starting this dialogue with someone, with Chris, like, you could see him, you could speak about it. So that started the change. So not having an AIDS Foundation, not having a place where to actually speak and communicate. You know how even coming out is a process. Now, coming out once again with HIV is another process. Now, the difference is we have moved so far ahead when it comes to the community that now you have the MGRM with their rainbow support network that gives you the support. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, what was in there in 2018 is something a bit more specific for people living with HIV.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it started.
I think it's so weird because I know by fact that I'm the only one, you know, out there with my face. So normally I wouldn't like say I'm the reason. But I think what happened is that HIV became a person. It wasn't information. It wasn't warnings. It wasn't
percentages
and facts. It was this person called Chris who now hugs people on the streets.
Yeah, let's talk about hugging people. Okay. Where did this come from?
It's so pre 2020, right?
Like,
oh my god, I would do anything for that experience. So what happened was I came back to Malta after this interview, and I did that suggesting, why don't we just would you be interested in me having like a, I don't know what to call it, like a talk, an open evening where I just tell people of my experience, yeah. And you know, and for the funny thing is, me explaining this in my head, that's like completely natural thing to suggest. But for, at least for Malta at the time, and maybe even still, that's very, like, it's very daring. Like, people, I remember people saying, you're just so brave. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't, like, at the time, I did not understand what that, why that was.
Yeah.
I will get that later. When that meeting happened, and it sort of, I think, I don't know, I have the feeling that for many people in the community, that must have been a very special experience to have an example of someone being completely unapologetic, saying, yes, I have HIV and yeah. this is what it is, and seem to be okay, you know. And it was after that that I started thinking, what's the challenge in Malta? What is the challenge? Why is this such a big deal? And I remember thinking, maybe they just need more examples of you know, how, I don't know, maybe we just need to be more visible. So I, at the time, I'd already, you know, because Jonathan from Love in Malta had interviewed me, I said, I have this crazy idea. What if, and it's not a new idea, it's happened before. Like, I just completely stole it off of somebody else's idea, because, you know, why
wouldn't you?
Why waste creative energy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, what if I did this thing where you film me standing somewhere in Malta with a sign saying, I have HIV. Are you really afraid to hug me? Are you afraid to hug me? And they just loved it, and with support both from Clayton and Love in Malta and some other people around, we dove into this. And I have to say right away that it's the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. Like,
what was your train of thought leading up to it?
Leading up to it, I wanted to run away. No. Okay. It is
great, look, impression, Malta.
No, not in that sense. It's not that I was afraid of Malta. It's a very fragile experience, because even though I, as a person, feel very I don't feel that I need to, stand up for my. For who I am because of my HIV status. It's one of the least interesting parts of my person sometimes, I think. But, you know, standing there with a literal sign and not knowing what's going to happen, because, you know, I didn't, as a, today, like today I would have had a different approach, because now I kind of know the ropes around, you know. But at the time, it was just a leap of faith, sort of.
Literally, yeah.
But it happened, and I was standing there with the sign. I remember when it was like he mic'd me up, and yeah, I had written the sign, and then it was like, okay, now, you know, go into the middle. And I remember my body going, nope.
Not happening.
Not happening.
But my legs were leaving anyway, so I had to follow him. I think, it's always like that, right? The first hug. I remember the first hug so well. It was like an elderly lady. I think she was British. And she saw me. I didn't see when she started to approach me, but I saw her approaching me with these big open eyes and a smile and just both arms around me. And it just something clicked.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, this feels good.
Yeah.
Like, and I think today of all years, right now, at all time, people understand the importance of a hug. That is a very fragile moment. And then, you know, this is kind of what happens, I think, like socially.
Why the hug, though? Like, why specifically there was the need for a hug?
Good question. So there is still a sort of outdated thought that HIV can sort of transfer just physically, just like by touching people or by sharing a glass of water or, I don't know, office utensils. And that is not true. So I think the hug, for those who would maybe still have that lack of knowledge, it would be hopefully eye-opening that, okay, wait, if a person can... If all these people feel safe hugging a person with HIV, what am I missing? What's going on? And also because it is, of course, visually, who doesn't like watching hugs? I mean, I'm a hugger myself, so I just love getting hugs. So it was a win-win. And then, of course, if people haven't seen this video, it was an amazing day. Like,
we'll post it. We'll post it. We'll reshare it because I think it's good to have it. I mean, you know, we'll say it's post-COVID, but the message still stands, does it?
Absolutely. And it actually had its 2-year anniversary just before I arrived here, and it was a lovely revisit. And there were a lot of fun small interactions in the day. So of course I remember the first one, as I say, the elderly lady. Then in the middle of the video, kind of out of nowhere, a kid, like half the size of my height, came like from behind me, came in front and just stared up at me and just was ready for this hug. And I remember, like, I was not expecting a kid. Like, I don't think it in any of the preparations in my mind did I expect children to come and hug me. And when that happened, I just got this, I was just overwhelmed with emotion and happiness.
How do you feel? Because it was a kid. So odds are maybe they didn't even understand that, but the fact that it's a hug.
The amazing thing is I saw the mother there.
Okay, like, fair enough.
The kid ran off and the mother was just kind of proud and smiling. And
it's also a good message, though, isn't it?
Sorry, it's a good message.
Yeah, there is some sort of, when we talk about stigma, isn't there something that it's created innate in our, you know, it's not something we're born with stigma or with prejudice, it's something that it's fed in ourselves, isn't it?
It is. I mean, stigma,
or maybe lack of understanding?
It's a lack. Look, it's a mix between culture, history, you know, upbringing, lack of education, lack of information, or lack of availability of information, which is also why I rarely have a, I'm not mad at people stigmatizing people with HIV. I'm not, I can't be mad at people. They're uninformed. That can be partially their fault, because if they're adults, they can look up the information if it's relevant to them. But we're also living a life where we could all probably agree on themes, even within our own community, where if you would ask me about them, I would not know, because I can't be informed about all of the things in my life. Like, this HIV is a big part of my life, so of course I know a lot. If it's not part of your life, if you're not involved with it, then of course you might just be stuck with this old information and you think that's true. That's technically not your fault. You could do better. You could do better. But I mean, I don't blame people for stigmatizing.
I appreciate that, you know, because it's a conversation that we need to have also throughout our lives, also as activists. Marco, you want
to that's what it makes the hugging by a kid with the full support of the parent who knew what that meant, a very hopeful message. Why? Because the parent either had the information, which she decided to pass on to the kid at that moment in time when she accepted the hug, or the openness for the information, which she taught her kid, be open to information, allow yourself to learn. Fear, unfortunately, blocks us, because fear passes on fear and a bit more resistance to opening to information. It still can happen, but I think that's the message there, that the parenting skill showed that there is openness for information and for acceptance and for understanding, which is important in everything.
This is also why it's so crucial, like, the reason that I actually want to answer another question on my own, because, you know, even at home in Denmark, people are like, why are you in Malta doing that? Like, why do you care? And I really think that I want to say that the reason I care is that I've been through a lot of these emotions. I was not always open about this. When I got it in 2014, my freaking life ended. I got this this information 2 days before my graduation. My whole life was ruined. Like, I spiraled into a depression, and I did not have a person widely available, say, in public space, that was like, hey, I'm this and I'm fine with it. So it was a very lonely, very isolating experience. And as Marco mentioned a bit before, as coming out as a gay man is in my case is one thing, and then one, like, the second I got this message, like, in the chair receiving the message, I felt thrown back into a closet, because now I had to hide something else. So the reason I am here is because, even though I am not Maltese, I share a deep understanding of the process that many people here go through. And if my just being here can do just a little difference and push, you know, the right buttons, then I feel that it would be wrong not to. So that's why I'm here. And then we're coming back to the openness and the hope, like being, like what this kid symbolizes is also this old way of thinking is also, it's kind of a vicious circle, because of course, because of the old way of thinking, people don't want to come out. And because people don't come out, it's not visible. So new information doesn't really come to the people who need it.
Yeah.
So we need to break the cycle. Yeah. So that's what this can do.
What was the reception when this went public? How was the audience receiving such a campaign?
I mean, as it always will be, especially when things are posted on social media, there's a variety of yep. reactions. But I am so selective. I just read what I want to read. No, I do have an advantage because I don't understand half the Maltese that was said there. So you know, blissful ignorance, I guess. But the reception was good, and I do think that in the way.
It's okay.
Big mark on the face. In the weight of this video.
There is a reason why I asked this, yeah. because I believe that such visibility is the first step for a movement to be created, and that's where Checkpoint Malta comes around. No, I mean in the history of the birth of it.
Origin story of Checkpoint Malta.
Why did it be that you needed to stop? Like this is, I mean, great answer by the way on why you're working in Malta, but it wasn't just that hugging person a moment. You know, there's a process now happening
yes.
with the creation of an organization.
Yes.
Why though? Why an organization now? Like, what it's because you could even easily have said, I pat myself on the back and I'm done, you know? It's an easy route to take sometimes. But there's something else happening now, isn't there?
Well, first of all, why I keep doing it, I think, quite selfishly, it does make me feel good. Like, I have to, like, let's just be honest. Like, it makes me feel good that people in the community get back to me and say thank you so much for doing it. Really is like I'm really happy someone yeah. dares to take this conversation, and there's literally nothing I have nothing to lose in Malta.
Yeah,
that's the thing, and I think that is a superpower I have here, that I can contribute without fearing anything about my job or family, or like everyone, you know, everyone's got my back. So I do this for the community. I do this also for a sense of community, and for people who might be out there feeling that it's hopeless, then that it's not. There are actually people living with HIV who are perfectly happy and are making sure that hopefully eventually you can have a full free life as well, without concern of your status.
Yeah, when we're saying status, I think this is something we should delve into. I mean, we were having this conversation a couple of days ago about also the language that is used, and this is something that I'd like to touch upon. Also, mm-hmm. What do I understand by status, and also how can we, because something which I understand also very clearly is that my lack of knowledge as a person is something that I also need to learn. And so, thank you for this opportunity to give us this opportunity to learn. So what do I understand by this?
By status,
okay. And also just generally the language. I think I want to also delve into the language of regarding what we use, etc.
But we can start there. So,
yeah,
so why not? Why struggle? Status. When I say my status, it's because my status is that I am positive. I am an HIV positive person, or I am a person living with HIV. So my status is positive. People who do not have HIV are then ta-da, negative.
Fair enough.
So far with me. I think a lot of people actually this year starts to understand it because of COVID testing. So like,
yeah, exactly.
So everyone understands having something or not having something, how that works. So thank you, COVID. One good thing you did for
Marco was saying this last week, in fact.
Made us realize and how the terminology works for everything.
Yeah.
Viruses, bacteria, that's how it works. But of course, it was en masse. So everyone, this was a whole global, everyone together, everyone, you know, is at risk.
Exactly.
So everyone had to learn, because sometimes we think that it won't affect us, but COVID was something that affected us all, so everyone had to learn. Now let's use this information and transfer it to HIV.
Yeah. And then, okay, I think the next logical step, like, okay, so now we get what the term is. So there's positive and there's negative, or living with HIV, or having HIV. And then there's, we'll get into treatment and prevention later, but one thing I do need to get into is this term that I think a lot of people might have heard, which is undetectable. So undetectable is a term that you will encounter on a lot of social apps, or they're called dating apps, okay, on a lot of dating apps, or you will see it in writing. And undetectable refers to, so in practical, when I get tested at the hospital, not tested, I get checked, sorry, I get a checkup every half a year. They'll do they'll take some blood samples to just, you know, check out if all my HIV guys are doing cool in there. And hopefully there are none, meaning that, not none, but that there's such a unmeasurable amount that it doesn't get detected by a blood test. So that is the term undetectable, means that you look into the blood saying, okay, it's such a little amount per, I don't know the measurement,
whatever
measurement it is, that we know by fact after having done a research. There's been this research that concluded that when that is fact, when by fact you are undetectable, they have concluded in 2018 during the AIDS conference in Amsterdam, they presented this result that it is impossible, it's 100% impossible for anyone living with HIV who are in treatment that is functioning so well that they are undetectable to pass on the virus.
Yeah.
So, in short, a person who is positive, is living with HIV, if they're in good treatment, they are undetectable, meaning that the treatment is so good that they cannot in any way transfer the virus.
I think this is important also to clear it, because part of it is also from where I stand is the stigma of certain misconceptions and misinterpretations and just lack of information, with something that we touched upon. In the second part, maybe we'd like also to go into the treatment and also mm-hmm. a little bit the situation here in Malta. But before we do that, we're going to go for Don't Look Back in Anger. These are Oasis, and we'll be back in a few short moments.
You've seen
Danwa aħna unu Eman Borċ ma'kom l-lum għal-programm ieħor u l-lum qed nitkellmu dwar anke esperjenzi ta' individwi li jiexu bl-HIV. Mana għandna lil-Chris u l-Marco f'isem Checkpoint Malta fejn tkollna konverzazzjoni interessanti li qiegħda tkompli ma' dik tal-ġimgħa l-oħra u għalhekk inħeġġiġkom li jekkadkom ma smajtux il-programm tal-ġimgħa l-oħra titħlu fuq il-podcast li għandu l-istazzjon campusfm.um.edu u hemmhekk jew anke tikbu fuq Google. Kunu tistgħu taċċessaw ukoll dawn il-programmi jew anke fuq il-paġna tagħna tal-Facebook Eman Borċ on Campus FM. Inkomplu diskussjoni, so we were talking about the terms and we just concluded before in regards to undetectable and what that means. When we were preparing this, when we were preparing a little bit the themes and what we want to extract from this discussion, one of the slogans that I used was prevention is better than cure. And there's an asterisk on that. Let's go into it.
Let's go into it. So I agree as far as prevention is better than something. No, so there is no cure. Once you, at this point in history and time and space and dimension, getting HIV is a permanent thing. You can then, of course, for some people, of course, you can get treatment. Let's say that you can get treated so that it is held, like the amount of virus is held at an absolute minimum, meaning that you won't be affected by it at all throughout your life, besides the fact that you do need to take constant medication.
Yeah.
Right? So there is no cure. And then I know I have to say some people, I read this article that there was like this and that. And yes, okay. It is true that there
is and that is people who are
cured.
Cured, yeah.
And these people have been, dying of terminal cancer, and then some, random enzyme in a faulty DNA string, whatever, meant that they discovered that this person, being treated by this medication, all of a sudden didn't have HIV anymore. So it was by chance, it was by luck, and of course it's an interesting fact, but
it's not commenting. It's not research specifically for HIV.
It's not mainstream. It's not something that you can apply and pass on.
Yeah,
it's something which induces further research.
Yes,
but
that's where it stops.
Yeah.
So it's the cure is still being found.
It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's just that I've noticed that some people say, "Oh, but things are getting better. Like they found a cure now." So no. That's not what happening. But I needed to have that.
No. And it's a gut. I'm going to call it myth because it is. It's a gut myth to just debunk.
Yeah, it's a good myth to debunk that there is definitely there are a few examples.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not lying if I say there are three or four. Like it's on that level. But for the rest, the better term would be the treatment. Prevention is better than treatment, and that is also that is a big topic though as well.
Let's go on prevention because that's the first. That is the kind of the first part which I'm seeing here, and prevention when it comes to Malta.
Yeah.
So what do you understand by prevention?
So prevention. If we go completely factual, so prevention is preventing getting HIV. So, this is a very multifaceted question as well, because from a political side, there's from a medical side, there's from a community side. But let's start somewhere. First of all, prevention is also information. So, like, the more you know about how to prevent yourself from getting HIV, obviously the less likely it is that you end up getting HIV.
So the first point is access to information, access to correct and effective information.
And a sexual health strategy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, if that is not there or it needs updating, doesn't give us the excuse not to get the information, because nowadays there are multiple places where one can look for good verified information. So it's also the responsibility of the individual, not just the right of the individual to get it, but also the responsibility to find it if it's not updated.
So in what we're saying, just also to start also, like this is a conversation we had last week, but also just to touch upon that the National Sexual Health Strategy in Malta was written in 2011, and definitely there's no, it's it's not reflecting this current reality. And this is, I believe, what the prevention is on different multifaceted yeah. approaches. I'm not going to go into what comes first, because that's
no, that's impossible.
Other,
yeah.
That's a whole other thing. But you were saying regarding prevention.
Yeah. So. One of the more prevalent or the more prevalent discussions that are being had is the use of PrEP. PrEP is short for pre-exposure prophylaxis, basically something medication you can take to make sure you do not get HIV. It's at least 99-point-something.
Like
success rate. Yeah. Should learn word. Saying these words.
Yeah.
It has been proven extremely effective in terms of prevention against HIV. And let me be the first to say that the first reaction people are like, yeah, but it doesn't protect you from other things. And that is true. It's very important that you also know that doing PrEP doesn't mean that you can't get all kinds of other interesting things having sex without a condom. So we are now getting into the discussion prevention. What types of prevention is there? And I remember I was actually talking to Mark about this yesterday, that I... it's the word safe sex or safer sex is such a difficult word to use, because against what? So it depends on what you're trying to protect yourself against.
Yeah.
If what you are asking me, Chris, how do I protect myself against any kind of STI, so sexually transmitted infection, well, then even I will have to be honest and say, well, the most effective means of prevention for all STIs at the same time will be a condom.
Yeah.
Good. However, I very often feel that that's a veil to disguise a fear of HIV and how that is transferred. So saying that if you're really mostly just concerned about HIV, then PrEP is actually...
I see. This is the first time I'm hearing it presented like this. But then again, it's a very factual way for it to say that.
It is, because I feel that some people will use the fear of their lack of information about how HIV works, and then sort of just instead of attacking the person living with HIV, they'll say, yeah, but you can get other things as well. But in reality, they're not actually afraid of getting chlamydia. They're afraid of getting HIV.
Yeah.
So if you can just say, look, if you're afraid of getting chlamydia, throw on a condom. Let's do that, you know. But if it is actually mostly the HIV, let's just say it as it is, then, PrEP is one thing. The other thing is knowing that, as I said before, undetectable means untransmittable, or in other words, you equals you. So those two factors at the same time. Basically, if you are a person who does not have HIV and you are on PrEP and you're having sex with a person who is living with HIV and is undetectable, and you're having condomless sex, it's impossible for this person without HIV to catch HIV. It is physically proven to be impossible.
This is a good way also to understand that when we're saying prevention, it's not one thing.
No,
there
exactly.
is
exactly
an element of a mix of things, and one needs to do the research in regards to what they want to do the research about, basically. And why I'm saying this is because this is also something that as Checkpoint Malta, you're very adamant also that the information should be available.
Yes.
And when we're talking now about the treatment, so the other side of the coin, what do you understand by that?
Treatment is, of course, when you then know that you are, like when you're tested positive for HIV, the what is super important about that is that you want to get into treatment as soon as possible.
Glad you mentioned that.
Yes. So, but we'll get into the whole testing part, I know, at a certain point. But right now, in terms of treatment, it is crucial that you get into treatment as soon as possible. Because what I said before about undetectable is valid, because you're in treatment and there's as little HIV in your blood as possible. So obviously, what is also true is that when you're not in treatment, there is a risk that you have a lot of HIV in your blood, meaning that you are highly likely to be able to transfer the virus to someone else.
Yeah.
So that's also why now this whole testing culture, we'll get into it, this whole testing culture needs to change, because it is actually a problem that people don't feel confident or feel safe to go get tested, because it's a bigger issue that you don't get tested and just hoping for the best than getting tested, getting the information, then getting as soon as possible into treatment so you don't pass on the virus to other people.
Last week you mentioned something regarding this, and I'd like to maybe rephrase that, that it's safer for one who is HIV positive and knows their status rather than someone who doesn't know.
That is why we always say that one should know their status, one should get tested regularly depending on their sexual lifestyle. They should get tested regularly. Why? Because knowing someone's status, you know what you can do. So if you know that you're positive, right, you know that you're on treatment, you know your status, you can share it with the person that's your partner, right? And like that, it's important because you know what's going on and you can take control of your health, your sexual health, your personal health. Whereas if you are too scared to get tested because of what people might say, what people may say, what gossip they're going to go around you, you still have that, you're making yourself even more vulnerable. So you're avoiding one bullet for another. So what if you don't know, apart from passing it on, the virus could also start having negative effects affecting your CD4 count, which is the count of all your white blood cells, which, as we mentioned last time, help fight all diseases. If that gets lower through time, because some people do go untested for a number of months, if not more, there could be health implications. Why? Because the CD4 count goes down and you become more prone to infections. So knowing your status is always the best. Checking regularly is imperative. Depending on your sexual lifestyle, if you're very active sexually, then do get tested regularly, and that is what the person should do.
Yeah, but it was to tie it back to, so because we were actually also talking about treatment. So treatment is obviously that you will start receiving a combination of pills, either one pill if you're really lucky here. I know I have one pill a day. For other people, it can be up to 7 pills a day, which is now something that I know government is trying to phase out. So it's a more updated version. But this was the truth when I came back in 1819. That a lot of...
sorry, 2018, not 1819.
What did I say?
sorry. 2018. But yes. what the main message is here is that at the moment, locally in Malta, we're also... is it happening? Are we, like, from what you know, are we phasing the medication? Because I've heard, I mean, I know this is not a subject, but I've heard...
the short answer is yes.
Okay, let's keep it on that.
Yes, let's keep it on a hopeful note.
Yeah.
But the short answer is yes.
Yeah, and it's because also the advancement of research that from 7 pills now it's to 1 pill. But that's one part of the no, yes? I mean, if it's no, just...
No,
I'd like to learn, you know?
Eman is looking at me because I'm like kind of shaking my head. Yeah. I'm shaking my head not because it's not true, but because the advancement has been there for a while.
Okay, fair enough. There you go. So that's another thing. Yeah.
And Malta's catching up.
And Malta's catching up. That's it.
So that's it. Because, you know, the active ingredients are being joined into 1 pill, which makes it easier for a person to take the treatment. Which is important because, as Chris said, taking your treatment regularly is super important because it keeps the virus at bay. Mm-hmm. So basically, the virus doesn't have time to replicate and change and affect. And also, if it does, so if, for example, there is a lack of treatment, if it does, we all know that viruses replicate, make mistakes, become stronger, as we've seen with COVID when it comes to variants.
Yeah.
So that is why having access to good treatment, which can be taken regularly and it must be taken religiously, is important to avoid it from creating resistance to the actual medication, because then that's a whole other problem.
And that's the huge problem we had back in December of last year where government said there was no shortage, but there was just not in medicine available, so whatever you want to call it, we had an issue because people were scared because the information was scarce. The amount of medication that was available to people would just kind of run out and they wouldn't get updated. We actually needed to resource to basically crowdsource medication, which I guess it's not completely legal, but we did what we had to do to to help people.
Well, you know, it was a situation that presented itself at the time.
So I'm sorry, someone. I hope I will get off the island.
It'll be okay.
But No, so what Marco says is exactly this, that it's very important that medication is up to date, not just because, you know, if you're thinking it's like what's an old medication and what's a new medication. The thing is, when getting HIV medication in the history of the world is relatively new, you know, so the AIDS outbreak happened in the 80s, and then only the last, let's say, 10-15 years has medication improved to such a degree that it doesn't have to have a huge impact on your life. But long, this is another word we've learned the last year, so the long-term effects of something, as time goes on, for instance, some of the earlier medication, people living with HIV would have to have their, like, their liver number, like, I don't know what this is called in English, but like they had to get a lot of things tested from their organs and from their
liver function,
bone marrow, okay. All these things, because there was actually a downside of medication. And then luckily, because of the scientific because of the improvement of the medication, that's why it's so important that we shift. Because, you know, let's simplify it. You have a treatment, I'm giving you this medication, then next year we find out that this medication potentially damages your kidneys. Would you not rather have a different medication that does not have this implication? Yes, that's a very simple question to answer. And that's why improvement in medication is so important to incorporate. Because there also, think about it on a political, financial way. If you're governing Malta and you're like, okay, give them the cheap pills, then who do you think is going to pay the bill if my bones are not really good in 20 years or my kidneys are dysfunctional? You know, I'm going to come to your hospital, knock on the door and say, hi, remember me, and then you'll have another bill. Yeah. So this is also why when we say prevention is better than treatment, it's actually a very overlapping motto.
It is the economies of health at the end of the day, you know?
It is.
It's an investment on health.
It is an investment. So that's also, like, getting back to PrEP. Look, the fact of the matter is, it's cheaper to have someone on PrEP than to have someone risk having to be on HIV medication the rest of their life. It's just, it's a cheaper bill. I don't want to talk about people and bills this way, but let's just do it for a second and say, this is why there is actually a huge incentive to actually look into prevention.
Yeah. What's the because well, like 8 minutes left, so we'll try to start wrapping it up. But what are the main priorities at the moment for Checkpoint Malta? Isn't that something that I think it's important to understand? Like when it comes to prevention, is it treatment? Is it testing? Maybe
yes.
What is the most imminent? Because I think everything is a priority, but what is the most imminent?
I really feel that I say this as my vision, but it is also the vision of Checkpoint Malta, is to change the culture of and the paradigm. There has to be a paradigm shift in how people feel about getting tested in Malta. I would want Checkpoint to lead the way into a testing culture that means that going to get tested means that you're taking care of yourself and that you care about yourself and your community. I want to make sure that there is a support network directly available to anyone testing positive for HIV, or at least when being tested, having a sort of eye to eye and a face to face with someone who talks on your level.
It might be a simplistic question, but it's important to ask. Why is it so important, the support network, when you get that result? Because I think we're losing the point sometimes when we say, as activists, when we're talking about the political agenda, we remembered about the test, but then we forget the after element of it.
I think change is scary, whatever change it is. Relationship status, new normal, whatever change is scary. And we all know that whatever the change is, having your support network is imperative. Now, if the change is fueled with stigma, unknown, and fear, and decades of history, which was at times quite negative, and most, as all human beings do, we focus more on the negative, I think that support network is even more important for something like that. I don't want to make it sound that one is more important than the other, but let's forget the baggage that status has. So, support network is important all the time. But in this case, I think it's equally important, and it's important to actually not feel alone.
Isolation is something we can all relate to in very different ways. And as I mentioned before, my personal experience, it can be very, very different, but my personal experience was being shoved back into a very dark place.
Yeah.
And I remember going out feeling sort of like a ghost, and I didn't know who to talk to and who I dared to talk to. So it is really essential for me that we make sure that it is a safe space to get tested, and that we slowly make it more attractive for people. Look, I don't want to force people to come out. It's not about people coming out. It's about people not being afraid to be honest about who they are. And the more we can make sure that there's comfortable safer spaces, and there's enough information out there, it will happen. And the more people who come out, the safer it will be for other people to come out. And then we have the community, and we won't feel isolated.
I think that's a very beautiful way how to conclude this. I mean, because we mentioned a lot of things, we mentioned a lot of points, and I do believe that there's an overlap in all of them. It's a link. It doesn't, one doesn't come before the other. But this sense of community, for me personally, that's always what we're yearning for. That's always what is missing when you're going through a process, whatever process it is, coming out, acknowledging your status personally or in public, you know, whatever it is, that sense of community is always something that you know, it's a need sometimes. So if anyone wants to contact Checkpoint Malta, how can they do that? How can they join the community?
They can contact us through Facebook. We have a Facebook page on Checkpoint Malta. I think it's just Facebook.com.
Malta.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Very easy.
Also an Instagram account.
And also an Instagram account. But yeah, I think through Facebook, that's where we're primarily mostly active. If people feel the need to ask something or just need to get something off their chest in regards to these matters, we're also there. And even if they feel they have stupid questions but really want to know, then by all means, please do ask.
I think regarding these questions, there's way more to ask. I think we only touched like with last week and this week. It sounds like a very, very few percentage and the very tip of the iceberg of the whole reality.
Absolutely.
But I do thank you for finding the time to come and for having.
We got the conversation going.
We did.
The conversation is not going to stop. So everyone who wants to converse about this, go ahead, the conversation has started.
Checkpoint Malta for Il Pagina tal Facebook. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Marco, for having the time also to join us today and also last week. Dan il program jerġa jixxandar nhar is-sibt fl-10 kif idokku tokki tal-10 nkunu qegħdin ukoll nerġgħu nisimgħu dan il-programm. Tistgħu terġgħu ssegwu dawn il-programmi u l-programmi passati fuq is-sensili kollha ta' Campus FM grazzi għall-website ta' dan l-istazzjon u l-paġna tal-Facebook tagħna Emon Borg on Campus FM. Jiena ma tfadalli xejn xi nżid ħlief nerġa' nitaqa' magħkom għal programm ieħor il-ġimgħa d-dieħla għal diskussjoni oħra interessanti. Sa dak it-tant ma' komment.